This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome once again to Invest Talk. This is our June 12th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk, and as always, our goal is to help you become an above average investor. Now, if you're interested in investing but don't know what you don't know, we're here for you. That's my favorite saying, is you don't know what you don't know. And that's typically what gets most novice investors in trouble, right? They read a headline, they read an article, and they think they know everything about that particular topic. And in reality, if you're an experienced investor, you understand that there's different points of view, there's pros and cons, there's risks and rewards, and you need to weigh both sides. And one investment that might be right for one person may not be for another as well. So if you, we want to hear from you. We want to know what's on your mind. We want to help you with anything that could potentially improve your financial situation, whether you're a beginner or experienced investor. If you're looking for a sounding board to help you make the best possible choice, we are here for you. Now, one of the topics on the table today is our main talking point, and that's that's about ETFs. You know, they enable investors to buy and hold a whole portfolio of stocks or bonds, usually at low cost. But there are so many out there. So how to pick the right ETF for you, and we'll talk more about that. And we're going to spend a good amount of time answering your questions about individual stocks. And I'm sure after Friday's tech wreck and today's wasn't as bad as Friday, but after the last 2 days in the market, there's probably a lot of contemplation about your portfolio and how to analyze whether you should be taking profits, reducing risk, what you should be do going forward. And analyzing a company is a complex endeavor, and there are a multitude of variables to consider, both qualitative and quantitative. Qualitative is like brand strength, leadership, things that you can't put a number on, and quantitative are things you can put numbers on. So both types of data can be misleading in certain ways, and your perception might not always be reality, right? The brand's value might be overhyped because of X, Y, and Z, or vice versa. The numbers may look worse than they really are or better than they really are, depending on how you dig into the details. So the best way to temper any noise in your data is to refer to the stock chart. Does it line up with your overall thesis? Now, maintaining positions in strong companies and sectors also ensures your focus and greatly decreases the noise of extraneous information. So you must understand the strengths and weaknesses in your data and also how to read a chart. Now, qualitative factors are company specifics that cannot clearly be defined as numbers, like I said. Some of those factors include brand quality, reputation, management, industry position, customer loyalty, employee talent. And for many, these are the hardest concepts to grasp and get a good handle on. And this is where mostly experience comes in. Evaluating qualitative factors takes many data points that are not easily available on a website or just by looking at a chart. Now, once you identify and understand these various qualitative factors, you then evaluate your target company and compare those attributes to the rivals within their industry. See how they stack up. See where they place. Are they number one in their industry when it comes to the high end? Maybe they're number one in the industry when it comes to the best value. Number one in industry can mean various things. Are they top three, five? Maybe they're the bottom and on their way up because of management changes or something. There's a lot that can be uncovered with qualitative analysis. Then there's quantitative factors. And this is, like I said, evaluating the pure numbers. like earnings yield, growth rates, profitability metrics, price to book ratio, cash flow generation, dividend payouts. A little easier to find because you can look these up and they're produced by the company themselves if they're publicly traded. But there can be accounting manipulations that can mislead investors. Think Enron. Finally, earnings figures can be sorted a million different ways. So be careful not to rely on one figure too much in your final decision. Now, we as professionals sit in front of computer screens all day putting the investing puzzle together. And this puts usually the average investor at a disadvantage, but with enough work and discipline, anyone can begin to grasp the full picture. And the biggest problem is that most people try to narrow this complex topic in just a few key points, or just focus on the story. But anyone who gets paid to manage money like we do understands the full investing landscape and understands it's vast and complex, and each type of investment is appropriate for a different risk level. So your job as an investor is to make sure you see every part of the particular picture. And although you'll never see it 100% clearly, you want to get the brightest and biggest scope as you possibly can for whatever you're considering to put your money in. And that's why we say you don't take tips from your cousin or your friend or the guy at the gym. It sounds easy, and it might be somebody that you trust, but you need to do your own homework. And that's one of the reasons why we're here. We're trying to help you navigate this complex world. So what can we do to help? Let's talk about it. Our listener line is open, 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line, and we are live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday. So let's take this question in, the question that came in before today's program.
Hi, guys. I had a real estate question. Specifically, it's a gimmick real estate question, I guess I should say. I'm not sure what the area is like in Southern California where I live, but I know in central Pennsylvania there are tons of what appear to be handmade signs that say, we will buy your house, we pay cash for your house, etc. I have no interest in selling my house. I certainly have no interest in calling these people, but I'm curious to hear more about how this works. Certainly don't want to call their number and get on their call list of for any means, but I'm sure they offer 50 cents on the dollar at best, but I'm curious if you had any experience with people like this and how their operation works. It seems absolutely gimmicky. Certainly doesn't seem on a straight and narrow anybody that's in a business that makes a handmade sign selling these things. I wonder if you had any experience with that. I'm just curious. If there is any other questions for your show, this should certainly be at the bottom of the list. But I'd appreciate hearing any comment, specifically Justin, who's in the business. Thanks again. Love the show. Bye.
All right, that was a great question, and you're right. It is kind of gimmicky when you see these signs that we'll buy your house and give us a call. And they are going to offer you pennies on the dollar. And the reason is because these are typically flip investors. They're looking for a deal. They're looking for something that will pay them handsomely. They're going to buy your house if you're wanting to sell for whatever reason. Maybe you're behind in your mortgage or whatever, and they're looking for a particular a deal so that they can buy your house, put a little bit of money into it, and that's usually what they're looking for the most, is to put a little money into it and upgrade it and then put it on the back on the market and sell it for a profit. And that's what these flippers typically do. So that's what you're looking at. You're looking at a flipper. And some of them are amateurs. Some of them may be more professional. I'm sure if you're looking at a handmade sign, that's probably more of an amateur than a professional. But in today's market, where money's cheap, right? Carrying costs to buy your home and keep it for 6 months or so, however long it takes to get you out and get the contractors in and the work finished and then back on market and sold, it's a cheap endeavor, a cheaper endeavor than it's almost ever been because of how low interest rates are. So that's why flipping is being good, and that's why there's been a lot of a redux, I think, of 2005, 6, 7, and why real estate is broadly overvalued. I talked to a potential client today about selling some properties in the Bay Area, and that's I think that's a good idea if you don't want to hold it long term. So that's what you're looking at, and glad I could give you some clarity on that. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Investing in today's market is more challenging than ever. And Stephen, I always encourage you to invest in yourself before you invest money. Get prepared. Are you prepared to be successful? And never stop asking questions to us or yourself. So bring your money questions to us. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. That's how you get through and ask your question this hour. And we always encourage you to call sooner rather than later. We have about 40 minutes left in the show. Now, the number of ETFs or exchange-traded funds has exploded in the past few years. So we're going to talk about how to pick the right ETF for you. I also have some other discussion points as well. One is, why did the tech industry have such a volatile day on Friday, and does it mark a potential turning point in the market? And I'm going to discuss that. Also, tougher auto lending doesn't mean industry's bonds are suddenly safer. There's a lot of bonds issued in connection with auto loans, subprime auto loans, over between 2012 to 2015 or so, and that industry's turning. And I did Invest Talk Views on this last week, I believe. And there's some new news that just only intensifies the downturn, or shows the intensification of the downturn in that particular market. So I'm going to get to that. And then five steps to retire debt-free, if we have time as well. So, ultimately, however, we want to know what is on your mind. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question. Give us a call. Now, let's take a look at the market today with the NASDAQ down 32, another continuation from Friday's big tech sell-off. We had the S&P only down about 2 points and the Dow down about 36 points. So really a mild to moderate down day, definitely in the NASDAQ was really where the losses were highest, and more pressure seems to be coming into that sector. Now, does that mean we're not going to bounce from here? I don't think that's out of the question. I think we certainly could have a bounce, but it's to me, this market is on borrowed time, could have another month or so of chopping back and forth, and you'll have a lot of volatility between, I think, now and when the market really breaks to the downside. But it's certainly a market that is very, very risky, especially on the tech side, and I would be very wary in reducing your risk in your portfolios ASAP. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Here's a word of wisdom from Henry Ford. Obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off your goal. So let's talk about your goals. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm a podcast listener from Arizona. I really love the show. I had a question regarding two technology names. Micron Technology, MU, and Western Digital, WDC. I've heard you talk about Western Digital before. I know you guys, it seems like you guys have liked it in the past. Both of these stocks have obviously shot up a lot in the last year. But looking forward projections have both of these with single-digit PEs, and they both seem to be growing a lot. I was kind of wondering what your thoughts are on these two, which one you like more, and then potentially like an entry point into one of these stocks. Where would you look at getting in? Thank you. Bye.
looking at Micron Technologies as well as Western Digital. And he is right. We have owned Western Digital in the past. We did recently sell it, but we do like that company overall. And the projections going forward for earnings on Micron and Western Digital do put them in pretty low PE ratios, which certainly is possible. But those, once again, those are projections, and projections typically by analysts are over-project earnings. Doesn't mean that they won't be in that ballpark, but they typically are too optimistic. And as you get closer to earnings reports, they tend to downgrade them, and that's just the nature of the game. Now, Micron is a name whose earnings have been very, very volatile over time. And that's why I definitely would go with Western Digital on this front. While they're supposed to make $4.29 this year, they only made 22 cents last year, $2.65 the year before. 2012 and 13, they lost money. So I don't like the lack of consistency there on that front. So I would stay away from Micron, especially after this large run from from $10 in middle of last year to $30 a share, $31.20 at the close today. They also don't pay a dividend. The return on equity is very low, whereas Western Digital, much more profitable. They do have a little bit up and down earnings as well through their history, but they always consistently made money, and they pay a dividend, 2.3%. They don't have a ton of debt. Their return on equity is strong. They're kind of two different businesses. One, Micron is chips, and Western Digital is more about storage. And I think storage is only going to continue with the advent of big data, and I think we produce more and more exponentially more and more data on a consistent basis, and you're going to need hard drives and flash drives to make that happen. So Western Digital is my favorite in the data storage industry. I do think it's a little overvalued at these levels, but you know, if it dipped back into the 60s, we would love to pick it back up again. It's one of those names, when you compare it to Micron, there's not much hesitancy on my front. I would absolutely pick Western Digital over Micron Technologies. 8899 chart, 8899-2-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 30 minutes left, but it's going to go by quick. So give us a call. Now, how to choose the right ETF for you? Now, obviously, the vast majority of ETFs are designed to track an underlying index. But just because they're an underlying index doesn't mean that they're without their risks, right? Look at the Qs on Friday, they went down over 2%, even though they looked very low volatility in the recent past. So how do you know what is appropriate for you? Well, I think you need to look at the longer term volatility of the particular ETF. A lot of data points like beta are going to only look back like the last year, maybe 3 years. I would look back, try to look as long as you can. Go back to the last recession. How volatile was the name? How much did it go down in 2008? Did it go down 50% like the market? Did it go down 20, 30, 10, 5? What was the volatility of that particular ETF? And also in relation, that asset class. Right, it may not have been around in 2008, but look at its sister ETF or index. See what it tracks and understand, is that the level of volatility that you are comfortable with? Okay, so it's great that there's a transparent strategy to all these ETFs, and that helps you make a good solid decision. But the big question is, how does it fit in your portfolio, and is it the right risk level for you? Okay. Now, you also want to look at, by general rule, you want to make sure that it has enough volume. There's a lot of ETFs, because so many have been launched, that just don't trade a lot. And that adds to the potential liquidity risk if you ever did want to get out of it, especially in a market upset, for example. So look for ETFs that trade 500,000 shares or more a day on a regular basis, and make sure that whatever risk level that goes along with that particular index, you have to be comfortable with. And don't just look back a year, look back 3 years, 5 years, hopefully 10 plus years of the whole asset class to understand what level of volatility you could potentially face. And that's where the big risk is that everybody is crowded into these index funds and they don't really understand what they're buying, what risk they're buying. So be cognizant of that. Be sure to sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program. Insiders get access to chart lessons, recorded webinars, special watch lists, etc. It's free to sign up. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab.
Our podcast continues next. First, good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says that many portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and your life situation. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-on-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now let's continue with the podcast. We're glad you're with us today. Let's continue with InvestTalk for this Monday, June 12th. Financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein welcomes your call right now on any money topic. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Owen from Massachusetts calling. And I have a question about companies being bought out by other companies. Let's say that I have, 100 shares in, just any company, and it gets bought out. Typically, what happens? I'm guessing there are a variety of things that could happen, but I guess just in general, sort of, what would I expect? So thank you so much.
Well, there are multiple things that could happen. You're correct. It depends on how they're purchasing the company. Is it an all cash offer? In that case, whenever the deal closes, you'll get say 100 shares times whatever that buyout price is. That's what you'll get deposited into your account. The price will go up close to or very near that particular buyout price, and you'll get that once the deal finally closes. Typically, it's better to just take the little discount and move on and not wait the 6 months or so. 9 months could take a year for it to finally close. So you could get the full cash amount. Now, it could be a combination. They could buy it out with equity, right? And use equity to buy the shares in a particular name. And typically what happens then is the price will jump, and it'll be some sort of ratio between the acquiring company stock price and the current company that you own. And the current company will fluctuate slightly based on the fluctuation of the acquiring company. So that could happen as well. And then there could be a hybrid. Could be part equity and part cash as well. And when it finally closes, you'll get a little bit of both. You'll get shares of the acquiring company in your account, and you'll get some cash as well. It just depends how the acquisition is structured. So you're right. There are multiple ways that a buyout can happen. You just have to understand the terms and how that applies to the company that you own and is getting bought out. So I hope that answered your question. If not, just give us a call back. Ask a maybe more clarifying question. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 20 minutes left. Now let's get into Friday's tech slump. and why did it happen? Besides the fact that the vast majority of tech stocks in today's marketplace are overvalued, there's some structural reasons of why the sell-off was pretty fast and furious, and why it could intensify in probably a short period of time. Now, investors are starting to cool a little bit on the valuation, but it could also be a function of market structures. It could be a combination of powerful passive investing and market rules that can artificially inflate prices during rallies and deflate them during sell-offs. Now, as certain areas of the market do well, and there are price cap weighted indexes like the S&P, like the NASDAQ, right? The stocks that tend to go up get more inflows from this passive investing, meaning index investing. So as more and more people are putting money in index investing, the companies within those indexes, the ones that tend to do better, tend to continue to do better as long as those passive investing flows happen, because they become a bigger slice of that index as they grow, and therefore they continue to get pressure in on the buy side of all of those flows into index funds. So that's one of the reasons why there's such a divergence between the haves and have-nots within the particular indexes in today's world, especially when it comes to tech stocks. Momentum begets momentum. Now, when the fund flows in indexes slows, that reduces the purchasing in those areas more than it would kind of the smaller companies, right? It reduces the cash flow into the high valued stocks versus kind of the lower valued stocks. Okay, so that's one of the reasons. Then there's the risk parity funds. And this is a really big trend. It's kind of a complex strategy, but it has to do with volatility. And based on the volatility of a particular asset class, money flows into and out of particular assets. So the asset classes that have the lowest volatility tend to get the most money flow. And when equities go from kind of higher volatility historically to lower volatility, which you have seen over the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years or so, suddenly these risk parity funds, which have been getting a lot of flows, are putting more money into equities than they typically have in the past, because the volatility of equities is lower than it has been in the past. And so those money flows into equities begets lower volatility of equities, which begets more money flows into equities, which begets more, or say less volatility once again, and you can see this vicious cycle. Now, the issue comes when that reverses, when volatility suddenly picks up in equities. Suddenly, these risk parity funds have to rebalance their portfolios by reducing the equity positions. Which, what does that do? Increases the volatility in equities, which, once again, the risk parity funds have to reduce their position in equities even more, and so on. And so that's kind of the market structure that has been built by the Fed's QE, Fed money printing, lots of liquidity in the marketplace that is lowered volatility, and frankly has increased the likelihood of a more fractious market, a marketplace that is more prone to violent sell-offs because of the lack of volatility that was driven by money printing from the Federal Reserve. And this brings me back to a book called Anti-Fragile by, what's his name? I'm trying to remember his name. I can't remember the author's name, but go look it up on Amazon. Anti-Fragile, great book. And basically what it says is that volatility is good. Volatility makes people worry. Volatility makes people critical of companies and industries and asset classes. And it keeps valuations at more sustainable levels. And when you have a lack of volatility like we've had, it puts the incentives behind overvaluing areas of the marketplace to a larger degree and creates a marketplace that is actually more risky rather than less, which is what the Fed was trying to do, but in reality, they've actually done the opposite. Now, do your investing goals include real estate? Where do you start? How much cash flow should you expect from income property? Now you have another source of answers for your real estate questions. Get a note to me. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com and I'll get right back to you.
Click on our InvestTalk Insider section on investtalk.com. You'll see stories and more like these: 3 bad excuses for not building an emergency fund, and 3 stupid IRA moves, both from Motley Fool and from USA Today. Retirement planning, 11 steps to $1 million nest egg. Important money topics from respected sources. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Invest Talk Insider.
Good afternoon, Steve and Justin. Hey, this is Mike from Victorville, California. I'm calling about a question I have about the Boston Beer Company, ticker symbol SAM, Sam. Just wanted to get your take on it. The numbers look fairly decent to me. I know it's fallen quite a bit in recent months. Just like to hear your thoughts where you might pick it up, if you would pick it up at all, and get your take on it. Thanks.
All right. He's looking at Boston Beer Company. This is a name that has kind of fallen from grace, hit a high of $325 a share back in, was that the end of 2014? No, beginning January of 2015. Now it's down to $135.90 a share. So it's had quite the decline. And oddly enough, their numbers haven't really fallen that dramatically. To be honest with you, back in 2015, they made $7.25 a share. This year, they're supposed to make $5.45 a share. It is down 20% from last year, but it's not like they're losing money. So I like what you're looking at here. It is near some support, but it doesn't seem to be bouncing very strongly. I'm looking at $100, $135 now. Let me look at some of the figures. It does look fairly cheap. I guess it's not super cheap yet. Earnings yield 7.5%, which is solid, but not for a name whose revenues and earnings are now falling. I don't like that. So I need something more in the 10% range. No dividend, so no real, not paying me to kind of wait for that turnaround either, which I don't like. Enterprise value to EBITDA is around 9, which isn't exactly expensive, but it's not super cheap either, although it is around as cheap as it's been in a long, long time. So, you know, it's getting there. I'll say that. It's getting to a level where I think it's becoming attractive, but I'm calling $100 a share. At $100 a share, I like this name. A $1.6 billion company at $135. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's still kind of small cap. It's come back down to earth from very lofty, overvalued levels, and it's not overvalued anymore, but it's not cheap enough yet. So I want $100 a share. That's where I'd pick up Sam Boston Beer Company. That is the symbol. 8899 chart, we have 10 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, I want to hear from you. Now, I did an InvestTalk View segment last week, and I talked about the auto industry and how it's kind of in for a rocky ride between now and the end of 2019, and refer to that video on more complex explanation of why, but in general, it all started with the financial crisis, and that pushed used auto prices up dramatically in 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15. People leased a lot because of that. If you understand how leases work, you'll know why. And now record leases are turning into record returns in the auto lots, right? Because people turn in their leased cars and the used car market is taking a big tumble because of that. And also because of subprime lending. Subprime lending was really big around the 2013, 14, 15 time frame, and losses are picking up quickly from all of those subprime borrowers. Moody's has been downgrading a lot of the asset-backed bonds. Remember how Wall Street packaged mortgages back in 2005, 6, and 7 into asset-backed securities? Then they put bets on those securities. Well, a lot of the same things are happening with the auto industry and the auto loans and subprime auto loans because of they had long lives. You know, they were taking out loans on cars that are 6, 7, 8 years long, and the interest rates were pretty healthy because of the low credit scores that these borrowers had. And so they were able to pitch them to Wall Street and say, look, back during the financial crisis, default rates were very low because people might have defaulted on their homes, but they still didn't default on their cars nearly as much because they need their cars. And so banks kept their lending standards pretty loose. And now Fitch is also downgrading the credit quality for a lot of these packages of subprime auto loans. Now, this has caused the companies that lend to the industry to reduce their issuance. And recent data from Credit Score Tracker Experience shows that the total share of subprime and deep subprime car loans dropped from 26.5% in the first quarter of 2016 to 24.1% in the first quarter of this year. That's a 10-year record low for the first quarter. Now, the big question is this a potential financial contagion? Fitch says no, because the subprime auto loan market is only about $180 billion, and that's out of the $1.2 trillion total subprime debt total market. So it's only about 15% of the marketplace. Now, can it create contagion? I think it could cause some companies go under, but overall, it's just a risk for the industry. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve, this is Chris in Mississippi. Good morning. It's 5 a.m. I'm on my way to work listening to the program. I just heard you talking to a lady who had some big blue chip stocks, and she's pretty far ahead on them, and she didn't want to pay taxes and take profits. You talked about selling short. Now, isn't this just putting off paying taxes? Because if you sell short, you end up having to pay taxes when you sell the short, right? So it's more or less just moving it, kicking the can down the road, kind of like our budget. Anyway, thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
You're absolutely correct. He's probably talking about a strategy called being short against the box is the term. And it basically means that instead of selling a position, you short the position at the same amount. So say you have 100 shares of Procter & Gamble. You don't want to sell it today, but you want to get rid of the risk of it, right? You don't want to take those gains today, but you want to get rid of the risk of owning Procter & Gamble. Well, you just short 100 shares of Procter & Gamble, and whatever price movement it has, you don't really lose any money because you'll make it on this side, on the long, and you'll lose it on the short. And you can put off those capital gains for X period of time. Now, a lot of times there's costs to holding a short, for example. So it's not free, okay? But it's a strategy that can work, especially for a short period of time. Like, for example, what if you own a stock for 11 months and you're up big and you could sell it today, but guess what? You're going to be charged short-term capital gains. It's your ordinary income tax rate. What you could do is just short the stock for a month, be short against the box. It gets rid of all the risk of it going down. And once you reach that full year, you just close out both positions, and the gain on the long will now be a long-term capital gains, which based on your income could be 15 or 20% as opposed to your ordinary income tax rate. So that's a strategy you could deploy for a taxable account. And that's probably what Steve was talking about. It's called being short against the box. Glad I can answer your questions. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. Let's get to our Invest Talk 101 section. A lesson in everyday investing. Let's quiz you first. Being a watchful investor includes observing trends in the economy, in industries, and obviously in the market. But when can the trend lead you astray? Now, can you leave you off track? And chasing trends is a behavior many amateur traders as well as professional investors make. Unfortunately, it's a behavior that the smart money institutional managers profit from in a bullish or bearish market. Now, as private or retail investors follow the trend, institutional traders use this as a liquidity event to sell or buy without affecting stock prices. Now, to avoid this trap, you got to know what you're buying. If you're confident the company will be able to remain and improve profitability over time, then remain invested. But if you are a momentum investor and you're prone to, you're worried about volatility and you can't handle 20, 30, 40% swings in the stock price, buying after it's up 50% is probably not the way to go, because you're probably near the end of the trend rather than the beginning. But it depends on your time horizon. If your time horizon is 10 years, maybe you are still at the relative beginning. So that's why we talk about understanding the risk, your time horizon, what is appropriate for you. What type of volatility and emotions can cause you to make bad decisions? So understanding this concept will help you avoid selling and buying at the wrong time. So that's Invest Talk 101. And if you have any questions, as always, you can get through to us for the next show at 888-99-CHART. But our time is up for this hour. Before we go, a reminder, Steve will be in San Jose this week, June 14th. He has one or two slots left. I know it's I think they're in the afternoon. So if you want to meet with him to reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and that's for June 14th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.